This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 7:37 right now, Wednesday the 18th of May. It looks quite dark and gloomy outside, but let's cheer you up with some of the biggest business news of the day. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan and Julian Ng. Now, top of the list for business news right now is oil. Now, oil is trading around $49 per barrel within sight of a six-month high. And this is supported by supply outages in Nigeria, in Canada, and also other producers which were adding to the supply glut.
That's right. So I think this is a prophecy having come true, because a lot of analysts were predicting that all this, the low oil prices will cause a lot of producers to take supply out of the market. Coupled with the disruptions in Libya, they're trying to unify rival oil corporations. And in Nigeria, which is supposedly a huge oil producer, a lot of militant attacks have cut oil production by 800,000 barrels a day.
I mean, the paradox for Malaysian consumers is that on one hand, you want to see the price of crude drop because it's going to affect, you know, the petrol prices, what you put in your tank. But the other side is, of course, your government depends on oil revenues, and of course, a fall in crude prices means less money in the coffers, you know, over some time, and so that's not good for, you know, support of social services and such. So,
well, hopefully the government can make more money and then put more money into our pockets, specifically or the pockets of the B40 who are struggling to with their living expenses right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, not too long ago, we were talking about oil at the lows of $20 per barrel. Remember, Jules?
Absolutely.
And now it's now, you know, even companies like Goldman Sachs have revised their target price for oil.
Total U-turn.
Absolute U-turn. They were predicting $20 per barrel, if I'm not mistaken, and now they're saying it could go up to $50 because of all these black swan events.
That just happened yesterday, by the way, and that just rallied traders all over to pile their money into oil futures, and which is why we're seeing now the oil prices flirting with the $50 level.
So what is the point of predictions? I mean, are predictions in this field really pointless? Because, you know, because there's no consequence from having a prediction and then revising it when things don't work out the way you wanted. Well, I mean, it's not like a soothsayer who might be, you know, sued for misrepresenting the future.
But, you know, I mean, for all the companies that need to hedge on their position on oil, they need to know what the outlook for oil prices might be. And again, I would say that the confluence of all these events happening at once, right? Nigeria, Canada, Libya, now happening when previously we were talking about the OPEC no talk, the Dubai no deal.
Of Iran.
Exactly.
Yeah, now it's shifted to that those new countries. But Sharad, I think somebody like John Bogle or Warren Buffett would agree with you. A lot of times they talk about the futility of predictions, but also a prediction of oil and where oil prices are going and the chaos in the oil world is driving a lot of oil-dependent governments into some kind of a response with a reflection that the good times are over and now they have to conserve their funds, because the Saudi government, after 41 years, they have disclosed their holdings in U.S. treasuries.
So it turns out that they have one of the biggest holders of U.S. treasuries. So we're talking about...
Not one of the biggest, but still a very meaningful size of slightly under $120 billion U.S. dollars.
So small in comparison to, say, countries like Japan and China, but still very sizable. Okay.
So they, Japan and China, hold them into the trillions. But, you know, Saudi Arabia has burned through about a big degree of their foreign reserves, of their 500 to 600 billion foreign reserves. And now they're disclosing, after 41 years, they're holding some 120 billion of U.S. treasuries. Why are they doing it, right? Why are they doing it right now, right at this point in time? I think they are prepping for that sovereign wealth fund setup, said to be one of the... It's going to be the largest sovereign wealth fund in the world, with a reputed size of about US $2 trillion.
Well, another country that's also trying to revamp its sovereign wealth fund is Qatar. They want to group $100 billion worth of investments in local company into a new unit, and they want to abandon the Qatar holding name, which is quite synonymous with some of their highest profile deals.
Yep, this sovereign wealth fund will own very popular brand names like Qatar Airways. And the reason they want to do this is to seek greater oversight by having one single person in charge. That could mean that could be either good or bad,
how
right?
Is just that one powerful. Oversight?
Yeah, well, maybe it allows them to move easily. But, you know, talking about sovereign wealth fund, Indonesia is trying to learn a lesson from Singapore.
Yeah, that's right. So Indonesia is turning to Singapore's Temasek as a model to create a sovereign wealth, sovereign investment company. And they are hoping that this sovereign wealth fund will drive the Indonesian economy forward.
So, I mean, can I ask a question about sovereign wealth funds, and especially ones coming from the Middle East or these big... you know, these holdings, are they real game changers? Well, are they going to, are their investment choices going to be any different from the kinds of deliberations or calculations made by other sovereign wealth funds around the world? Are we going to be, so my question is, are we just seeing another player and a big player, but are we seeing a game changer in this news?
It's really interesting because most of the advanced democracies don't have sovereign wealth funds. It's only the Eastern and Asian. I'm not saying that Asians don't have full democracies, right? But
Norway does.
Okay, so the sovereign wealth fund, the oil fund in Norway is a sovereign wealth fund with a difference because they don't take major stakes in corporations like what Temasek, Khazanah, the Chinese sovereign wealth funds do. They invest in little bits of tiny bits of companies all over the world. They don't have strategic stakes in these companies. So my question is, I'm echoing your thoughts, Sharad, why set up a sovereign wealth fund? Because and especially if you look at a country like Indonesia, they're so hungry for infrastructural funds and they're clawing money away from that to put money into sovereign wealth funds.
And my question is Temasek the best model? So Indonesia clearly saying, okay, well, let's look at Temasek. We want to set up a sovereign wealth fund. Is Temasek considered the best model for a sovereign wealth fund?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do think that Temasek itself has come into, come into some question, right? Partly because of the relationship between the person who heads it and the Prime Minister.
We've made the argument that government shouldn't be in business, but you often make the argument, Sharad, the counter-argument, Sharad, that some governments are good in business, Singapore being one of them. So can we, in this respect, say Temasek is a good example of how a sovereign wealth fund should be run?
These are conflicting goals, right? I mean, if you're really good in business, yeah, you can pay the dividends to your citizens. But if you're too involved with business, you are really tying up funds that could be used for development. But I guess some other reasons, like if you read some books on this subject, the authors will claim that sometimes governments want to buy into strategic technologies in foreign lands. Sometimes there is lack of entrepreneurial capital locally, so the governments become funders. And governments in Asia also have accumulated vast amounts of foreign exchange reserves as a result of the lessons learned from the Asian financial crisis when they had very little of it. Now they have built that up and they're thinking of ways to spend that money. But still, I can't help thinking that, the sovereign wealth funds can be conduits for corruption.
Yeah, the other thing, of course, is what does it mean for Indonesia to look to Temasek as a model? Is it the governance structure of Temasek or is it the particular deals it's entered to? And of course, we know that Temasek's had problems with some of its deals, especially in China. So which deal and what decision-making process do you want to model yourself on? And I think, so you have, I guess the question you pose about modeling has to be much more granular. What exactly,
which part of it
that Indonesia is interested in adopting for itself.
7:46 right now. We'll be back with more business news in just a few minutes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.